seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
Mm, it's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. It's great to have you with us on this Saturday morning. Number to call with your questions. We'll be getting back to the phone lines in just a few minutes after the top of the hour feature. That number to call, 801-575-8255, or you can text us your questions at 57500. We've been getting a ton of questions on social media about where do I buy seeds? And people, Ton, people are getting very excited about at least planning for their spring crop because we can't do much right now other than plan, right?
Yes, and planning is just so important. You know, I love diving into gardening catalogs and even online, you know, the emails start to increase from, you know, all the different places I've ordered, you know, sometimes two or three a day. And that is the one area I don't mind getting spammed by the seed companies.
By the seed companies, because you want to see what's new, right?
You really do want to see what's new. And it's so fun to see what new varieties are out or heirlooms that you want to try out. And it just kind of, as a gardener, it keeps me afloat until mid to late March, and you can really start getting out there and doing things in the garden. And so I wanted to talk about just gardening catalogs in general, ordering online, advantages and disadvantages to doing so.
And unfortunately, they are not all created equal.
They are not. There are some really scammy, I won't call them catalogs, but scammy companies out there that will sell things that you absolutely don't want in your yard. You know, one example that we get calls on occasionally is a bulb called Star of Bethlehem. Its name sounds great and it's a beautiful flower, but it spreads like wildfire in your yard to where you plant five or six of these bulbs and within 10 years it has spread throughout your entire lawn and throughout your entire garden and there is nothing you can do about it. You know, there are some sprays out there that are marginally effective that over time will help suppress and eventually control most of it, but it will take years to do.
So how do people differentiate between good information and bad information?
Well, do your research online. And if you see a plant that you are unfamiliar with, the first thing I would try is something along the lines of USU Extension and Star of Bethlehem, or USU Extension and Rhododendron. If that doesn't bear any fruit, so to speak, no pun intended, then start doing something a little more general, like growing rhododendrons in the Intermountain West, or, you know, growing
downfalls of growing rhododendrons in Utah.
Yes. And so local garden centers are also a very good resource. They will carry some harder to grow plants because people want to plant them. But they are not in the business of selling you bad plant material because you won't come back. And so local garden centers can say, hey, yeah, you want to grow a dogwood tree? We'll sell you one, but you know, you're going to need to park this on the east side of your home. You're going to have to amend the soil 18 inches deep and continually do it. And you have a 50-50 chance of it living past 2 or 3 years, you know, and they may not be quite as blunt, but local garden centers are wonderful sources of information, especially in the winter, because a lot of times there aren't as many customers there and they can spend a little bit more time helping guide you through what may and may not work in your yard.
Mm-hmm. So the first thing is when you do see all that fun new stuff is do a little bit of research. Don't just order it spontaneously.
No.
Make sure that it's going to do well here.
Make sure it's going to do well. Some other things to look at. If it says something along the lines of thrives anywhere, those are red flags. That means you'll never get rid of it.
Oh, wow.
So when I start seeing thrives anywhere, spreads rapidly, grows 8 to 10 feet a year on some of the cottonwoods and willows. So these are things that you need to be aware of. And the other things with this, especially the sketchier companies, will sell you plants and they will rename it something that you're not familiar with and not include a Latin name so you can't figure out what it is. I have seen them do this with hybrid willows. 10 or 15 years ago, there was a company selling what they were calling, I think, Royal Oss, A-U-S tree, as this exotic grows anywhere tree. And it was just a hybrid willow or cottonwood bred for the paper industry so that they could grow these trees quickly, harvest them, and get paper pulp for inexpensive paper. And they were selling them for homeowners because the trees grew so rapidly. And so if it's a name that you've never heard of and can't find a lot of information about online, there's problems.
Okay.
So some other things to be just more cautious about. I prefer to buy locally if I can. Local garden centers do have a really good selection of seeds starting in February usually, and you can go in and get some wonderful things. Shop early. Now, there are companies that specialize, especially in heirloom tomatoes and other plants, that there's just only so much retail space. You can order those, but download fact sheets on how much you actually need. You know, when you see a seed packet that says 100 tomato seeds of one variety, that will probably last you 4 or 5 years.
But will the seeds be good?
If you freeze them in a sealed container that is airtight, yes. They will last that long. Tomato seeds will go that long. So know how much you need and maybe plant 20 to 30% more in case you have some plants die. Don't be afraid of trying new things, but also be aware that you need to treat these plants as more of a commodity. They're not puppies. And if something dies on you, you haven't oftentimes done anything wrong, or it was an honest mistake, and you can regrow it. And just don't get too emotional about losing things.
We hate to fail.
Because, you know, generally you can plant more or you can buy an acceptable substitute. And so when you're experimenting with things, there's a gardener I knew that was into growing really exotic things in Utah that shouldn't grow here. And his rule of thumb was, I let it die 3 times before I give up.
Oh, wow.
And so just know
much
that sometimes these heirloom vegetables or varieties from other parts of the world, you know, blue potatoes, for example, or eggplants from India that we don't commonly grow here. We grow things here, and the seed catalogs carry things that are tried and true. And so when you're dealing with less common, more exotic things, you run into that more often.
Yeah, and if you want to see some more exotic things, when we did go up to the demonstration garden with Sheridan Hansen, we did learn about some different kinds of peppers and things that you can plant. Now, you can check out that video on the KSL Greenhouse YouTube channel.
Yeah, there's always wonderful information from Sheridan on things you can grow.
One thing I really like about this article is it gives you all the common terms. So if you don't understand terms that you're seeing in those catalogs, you can find a complete list in this article that we've posted on the Facebook page, the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. I know people are going to want to know, before we take a break, though, what some of your favorite catalogs are. So if we're talking heirloom tomatoes, what's your favorite catalog?
Totally Tomatoes is a good one. And Sheridan would be a little better at this than me. But I like Totally Tomatoes. They're generally a little less expensive if you're into the tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Johnny's is another one if you like very productive things. The thing about Johnny's that frustrates me is you get to like some of their varieties and they switch them on you after 4 or 5 years. And so you can't get too addicted to one plant variety. My BHN 1021 that I've liked has been discontinued by them. So Johnny's is another good one.
Now they're for general. You can get general vegetables.
Yes. Not heirlooms.
Not just tomatoes.
Yeah. Park Seed is another one I've ordered quite a bit from. Burpee and Gurney or two that carry some unique varieties, lots of heirlooms. But if you're getting into the really obscure things that nobody's growing, I think we might need to call Sheridan and do a brief interview with her.
That'll be fun.
To just see what she likes in those areas.
All right. And again, you can find that article on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page that includes those common terms, things to watch out for when you're trying to be a savvy shopper in these seed catalogs, and some seed catalogs that you might want to check out. We're going to take a break, come back with your calls. Jim is up next on the line. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Next listener says, Ton, they have a huge spruce tree. This is Dee in Midvale. She says she has this huge spruce tree that sadly died on the west side of her home, and it provided a lot of needed shade for the home. She's wondering what a good replacement for that might be.
I'm wondering if it went down due to a lack of deep irrigation. That is something that very commonly knocks those spruce out. A lot of times people transition into a water-wise landscape, not realizing how much water they need to provide to their trees. Because trees,
so you're saying that maybe a spruce is still a good option, and maybe that's why it died?
It may not be a good option because it did die, and I wouldn't go back with another spruce because there could be diseases in the soil or pests in the area that the spruce would be sensitive to.
Okay, so what are some options?
If they wanted a conifer, maybe Bosnian pine. Those are very adaptable and seem to be a little more drought hardy. An Austrian pine might work if they wanted another conifer that gets bigger. Although the pines, they may need to be treated for black or white pine needle scale on occasion. Those would be options. There are some Yugo pines that get 20 to 30 feet tall that are very drought hardy once established. But the question's very broad. And if they're just looking for a tree to put in there to maybe bring some shade back, something kind of quick in there is growth would be some of the hybrid elm trees, or maybe a common hackberry would be something, or they're a little shallowly rooted, but a seedless or fruitless mulberry would be something that would give them some faster shade. But I could be going up the complete wrong alley with this because I just don't have enough information to give a really good, recommendation.
Okay. Next person says, last week they heard us talking about fast growing trees like sycamore maple, bur oak, etc. And they're wondering if any of these fast growing trees are messy.
These are not fast growing trees. They are a little, once established, they'll grow a foot to 18 inches a year, which is more of a slow to moderate, but they're going to be, for shade trees, faster than some others, but still be around in 50 or 100 years. And so I don't want to set expectations too high on how quickly they grow. If they want something a little faster, probably the cleanest option is going to be a fruitless mulberry. They don't seem to break as much as other fast-growing trees. They'll grow 3 feet a year minimally once you get them established. The downside to fruitless mulberry is that they are have a very dense canopy, and so grass struggles underneath them, and they have some surface roots near the trunk that help support the tree, and so it can be hard to mow around them, and you don't want to cut those surface roots. And so you need to install eventually 10 to 15 feet out from the trunk, 7 or 8 feet in any direction, a flower bed or a mulch bed so that you can deal with some of these shallower roots. But if I had to recommend a faster growing tree that wasn't going to just collapse on you in 15 years, it would probably be the fruitless mulberry. My second choice would be Sensation Box Elder because it's also seedless.
Okay, back to our phone lines. Jim is on the line from Salt Lake City. Good morning, Jim. What was your question?
Yeah, I have some property down in Monticello, Utah, and we're all dealing with an issue down. It's called the beetle that pine beetle. It's killing my pinions. I've actually been spraying for a couple of years now. I got it from Great Basin Landscaping. That's kind of a blue color, but it's like $500 a gallon. But it's not doing the job. And I put pentobarc with it, and then I go around and spray the trees, just about 4 or 5 feet tall. But nothing's working. I called the Forest Service down there, but they never called me back, trying to figure out what I can do to kill it. But it's just wiping my trees out.
Well, the trees are going down because they're drought stressed, and they could be of an age that they are not as capable to fight off the beetles. And so the only other thing, I'm not sure what Great Basin recommended, but the only other thing I can really think of is something along the lines of permethrin, and it would have to be sprayed on the first 50-degree day in late summer late winter to early spring. And you would have to, you know, cover the trunk up to the tip of the tree and the major branches, which isn't very feasible to do.
No, it ain't.
A systemic is not going to go after the bark beetles because they don't feed where the systemic sits in the conductive tissue. And so a preventative with something like 7XLR, which is really hard to find, or a permethrin product is the option, and you would have to hand spray every tree.
I've been spraying with this. It starts with a Z, and I got it from them guys.
It's probably Xylem. And
probably that's what it is.
I would need to read the label again, but I'm unsure if engraver beetles like the Ips beetles and things are listed on Xylem as that being an effective product for them. That Xylem does work for a lot of other borers and things, but the bark beetles that are the engraver beetles, I don't know that they are on that label. You would need to look and see if there's Ips or some of the other engraver beetles on there.
I know Steve Regan told me they have something, but he said you may only get 5 to 8 trees with one setting, and it's like $250.
Yeah.
But the problem down there, these pinions are 30, 40 foot tall.
Yep.
They're just huge. And
yeah.
Then does that beetle affect the cedar too?
There's a different one that gets into the cedar. Up through southern Idaho, we're getting close to a break, but through southern Idaho, there are a lot of junipers going down to bark beetles. But I think the short answer is that drought stress and the age of the trees and the warmer climate has really done a number on them. And it unfortunately may be that those trees have to die and new ones have to sprout for the cycle to continue. But I know those pinions are very slow growing. So,
yeah, they're slow. And I have some down there. I just lost another one where I cut one down, and it's only about 8 foot tall. And it just,
yeah.
I mean, the beetle doesn't care how big the tree is. It'll jump from one tree to the next and just start wiping up the whole forest.
All right, Jim. Yeah. So sorry to hear that. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Text us 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. Taking your calls at 801-575-8255, and the phone lines are open. Or you can text us your questions at 57500. Mark and Draper was wondering, Ton, the effect on the deer population when spray seeding at the end of spring.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
Okay. What's spray seeding?
No idea.
Okay. We won't worry about that.
I don't know if he's talking about hydro seeding or aerial seeding.
Okay. Would any of those affect the deer population?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they do try to put in things that the deer could potentially eat in those mixes, but there's not enough information there for me to give an answer.
Okay. Next listener would like to know how to keep the thyme ground cover from turning black in the winter.
Cover it with snow cover will keep it going, but if it's exposed to cold temperatures, and especially if it's in a really wet area, if you have a clay soil and it's growing at the bottom of a slope, that can cause that to happen too.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I've never tried this, and so I hesitate to recommend it, but some light leaf cover, maybe, But thyme just may brown out in the winter.
Mine doesn't brown out, but I'm not sure if it's the variety. Yeah,
it could be the variety, but it could also be the soil, and it's just too wet in the area, and they have a fungal disease in there, such as Rhizoctania, causing it.
Okay. Next listener would like you to recommend a large yellow onion seed that grows well here in Utah.
The traditional one here is Sweet Spanish. That's the one our local growers grow. West Layton and Syracuse used to be an area where a lot of onions were grown. Box Elder County has some growers up there, the Call family. But Sweet Spanish is the one that we usually grow that you find in the grocery stores. There are some others out there, but that is the one that we've grown here for over 100 years that's done really well.
Okay.
There are some other yellow ones out there. I can't remember if Ebenezer is a white or a yellow, but Ebenezer is a variety really common in Colorado. That in areas of a similar climate, there is quite a large onion industry in Colorado, too.
Don't you have to have quite a bit of space to grow onions and make it worthwhile?
You need to have them spaced every 6 inches in the row. And your row is going to be about a foot wide just so you can walk and things. And so in a 20-foot row, you'll get 40 onions. I think the bigger challenge is that a lot of times we do the onion sets or bulbs, and those don't generally store well. And so they need to be used or somehow preserved quickly after you harvest them, because you have about 6 weeks to maybe 2 months to use them before they start to rot. The onions that store for long periods of time are grown from seed. And we had the question earlier from one of our listeners saying, do I start my onion seeds yet? And the reason you're starting those now is because they take several weeks to get to an outplantable size. And then you need to seed them in mid to late March outdoors to get an onion ready by August. And those are the onions that you grow from seed that will store all winter, because those bulbs are less than 1 year old and they want to complete their life cycle, where the next year they would go to seed and the bulb would provide all the energy to do that. And so when you have the sets and the little bulbs that you put into your garden, in essence, that onion considers that its second year, and it biologically or physiologically just doesn't store well, because that onion thinks it's the second year it's been alive. And so they just don't store. And so that's why the seed onions are the storage onions. So even then, even if you grew it from seeds, there are many onions that don't store for a long period of time, Walla Walla being one of them. And those need to be eaten fairly quickly. But you need to find a good storage onion, and that the Sweet Spanish seems to be one.
I have never thought of growing onions. I just don't have the space until this past year. What was with the onions in the grocery store this past year? They just went bad so quickly, and they were smaller and ugh.
There could be a lot of things going on. One, just we had a bad growing season, and we could have been bringing onions in from, you know, out of California, Oregon, the Midwest, because we didn't grow enough for our local needs, where most of our onions generally come out of Utah and Colorado. Some other things going on is there could have been a disease in them that was undetected until storage. We could have been getting onions, you know, for some reason that had already been stored for quite a while, and it was the last of the lot, and somebody got a really good deal on them and put them in the grocery stores.
There were even times, though, when you'd go to the grocery store and they were empty, like you couldn't even buy an onion.
And I think that there was probably a moderate shortage. I did notice that even in like Walmart, that a lot of times I'd go in and they wouldn't have the sack of 2 pounds or 5 pounds of onions. You just had to buy them individually. And when I see that, there's usually at least a mild shortage of the onions we want. Like the Sweet Spanish is the yellow one that we generally are using.
Mm-hmm. Next listener is looking for the name of a good company to cut an overgrown apricot tree. There are so many out there.
There are, and I hesitate to get into, use this one company, because there are a lot out there that would do a good job. I'm less worried about it if you're just cutting it down, because you know, as long as the company's licensed and bonded, has insurance, then...
It sounds more like they want a trimming, though.
Yeah, and so if they're trimming, there are not a lot of companies that do fruit tree trimming. And so I would get on, like, Utah Gardening Experts or Utah Gardeners and ask for recommendations of professionals that do prune fruit trees, because it's something that it has to be done in such a short window that the people that do it get booked up really quickly. And it's one of those things that if you want someone to professionally prune your trees, you might need to let them do it in mid-January, because that's the only time on their schedule they have to fit you in. And so you have to be flexible if you're hiring it out. But some of the orchards may have crews if you live in an area like up in Box Elder County or South Utah County that have guys that come out and we'll trim your fruit trees, or some of the nurseries may know of people also.
All right. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Leroy, your call will be up next. Number to text your questions, 57500. Thanks for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls and your questions. You can call us 801-575-8255 or text us at 57500. Just got a thumbs up from one of our listeners, Ton, to the sweet Spanish onion. They're saying it's a tried and true variety, which is what you said, and that it is commonly grown by our farmers. Let's go back to our phone lines. Leroy's in Midvale. Good morning, Leroy. How can we help you this morning?
I've got a walnut tree, and I'm breaking the walnuts up to store the meat in them. But I wonder why they turn black. I mean, I've got them from every shade, from the nice ones you'd buy in the store to some that are just pure black. Is there any reason for that? It's an old tree.
Yeah, there is. It's demon-possessed insects. They don't really have demons. They're just doing what they do. But it seems like it. And it's called walnut husk fly. And this little beastie is related to the cherry fruit fly that makes your cherries get the quote-unquote wormy. And so it's just one of its fine cousins. And USU has a fact sheet. If you do an internet search of USU Extension and walnut husk fly, it'll give you some spray timing. And I believe it's usually mid-July. But the hard part is, if you have a great big walnut tree, your sprayer will only reach so high into the tree. And there's permethrin products that you would spray, I believe, for a month to 6 weeks, every week or 10 days to keep that walnut husk fly out of your walnuts.
Okay. So it'd be next July before I'd spray.
Yeah.
It.
Download that fact sheet. It's free. And just do that internet search of USU and walnut husk fly. Mayor Murray put it together, and there's also a fact sheet on walnuts that we co-wrote on different varieties and things that will have information.
All right, great. Thank you so much.
All right, Leroy, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, wants to know how and when to trim a lilac bush to increase bloom production.
So how to prune it would be a technique called renewal pruning, and there are lots of videos online about it. But you go in toward the base of the shrub and you cut out about 25% of the branches, beginning with the oldest, gnarliest branches you can find. Easiest way to do it is with a Sawzall, and just get a wood pruning blade. They cost $4 or $5, like at an Ace Hardware. And I like them because they're 6 inches to a foot long, so you can really reach in there. But then they're thin enough that you can fit those between the branches. And you just take out what would equate to the 2 or 3 largest branches at the base, or whatever you consider about 25% of the canopy. And then after that, you would just give it a really light haircut. And the time to do this is as soon as it is done blooming. So sometime in late April to mid-May, depending on the weather.
Don't do it before they bloom.
You'll lose your blooms for the year, but you can. You just lose your blossoms.
Right. Next listener wants to know, they say they got a little compost bin to make their own compost from their fruit and veggie scraps. Do they need to add dirt or something else to break it all down?
It will kind of get slimy if all they're putting into it is just vegetable matter. And so if they could mix it with some sawdust just to help absorb some of the moisture or something similar, that will help out and it will make a better quality compost.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a compost bin?
No. I use a technique called slow composting, to where I just take the garden scraps out and either dig a trench and bury them or put them on my garden surface and let them decompose naturally. If it's something that I know is going to bring in a lot of things I don't want, you know, cats and dogs and skunks, I'll bury it. But if it's just like potato peels or, you know, parts like tomato skins or something like that, I don't mind just dumping it on the soil surface. And within a week or two, it decomposes in. And if I'm worried about it, I'll just rake some soil over the top of it.
So you can do that in your veggie garden with any of your veggie scraps. Can you always dig a trench if you don't like the way it looks?
As long as it's plant matter. You don't want to ever bury meat or dairy products in your garden, because you will get skunks, raccoons, dogs digging it up in the soil because they can smell it. And you don't want them defecating in your garden, because they oftentimes have viral diseases and other things in their feces that you don't want getting on your food.
But veggie scraps will work.
Always good. And you can just use a gardening hoe or a shovel and bury them 6 inches deep, and it's great.
Okay, so does that actually improve your garden?
It does. Initially, you'll get a little release of nitrogen, but as those decompose, it's no different than any other organic matter. It does decompose more quickly because of the water content and it's fresh. But it's no different than putting compost in your garden on a really on a micro scale.
Mm-hmm.
I had a neighbor that would use this slow composting, and he would just start on one garden row in the middle, and he would make his kids go out and dig a 3 foot, 6 foot trench. And every meal, it was one of the kids' job to take the bucket out, or at least once a day, and dump it into the trench and pull the soil over. And they just work their way through the gardening rows. And as long as it was from vegetables or fruit, you know, plant matter, it was great.
Okay, so you're improving your soil in your vegetable garden. You're minimizing waste that goes to the landfill. Why aren't we all doing this?
Time, effort, you know, it's just...
Okay, but... If you dig that trench and it's already there, so you know where you're going to be, it sounds like it's pretty easy, actually.
It is. And so you just rake the soil over the top of what you dumped to keep the smell down and keep the critters away, and you just keep working your way down the trench.
Because isn't really one of the drawbacks to having a compost bin the smell?
It can be. If you're composting correctly, the smell won't be that bad. If you're turning it, adding water in, and making sure it's well aerated, it'll smell a little earthy, but you shouldn't have a stink coming off of your compost pile. But if you don't have time to do that, you know, just especially if your soil's in good shape and you can just quickly dig a trench, that's another technique that you can use, so you're not throwing away things that you could compost.
Well, I've always avoided the whole compost bin thing because I'm like, where am I going to put it? It's right where people come into the backyard. That's going to smell bad. I've just never.
Yeah.
So your technique actually eliminates all of those issues.
It does. And it's just something you can do and still put it in there. It improves the soil just the same. It just is that you're doing it in small enough amounts that you're not having a lot of stink. The soil is covering it. And within a couple of weeks, because it's very fresh organic matter, it's broken down.
And even if you didn't do it every single time you had that matter, it would still be saving and improving your soil.
It would. The other thing I like about it is, like, for me, getting a composting, like one of the rotary composting bins, by the time you fill that and turn it, the amount of compost I get out of it for the amount of work,
mm-hmm.
it's just not something that I want to put the time into, but I can still get the same benefit by just burying it in the garden.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Come back with more of your calls and your questions. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. We'll be right back.